So this call is recorded. Now, do we have any attendees that are new, that haven't been here before, that would like to introduce themselves?
Hello, my name is Josh. I'm actually, this is my first working group call. I mean, I'm trying to understand, how DIDs work and how what kind of security they offer, kind of thing. So a pretty much newbie here, so would like to gain something out of this call as well, and join new calls as well, other calls as well.
Excellent, thank you. Where are you joining from today?
I'm from India, from Kerala, the southernmost state of India. Yeah.
Excellent, well welcome. It's great to have you. Appreciate you attending. Thank you. So what we do in this call is we're going to go over various activities, meeting notes and such that have happened in a wide range of the working groups. And that kind of helps you catch up on meetings you might have missed. It also points you in a direction if you have a particular interest for a particular technology. Then we have all those links here on the wiki page, where you can go over to those working groups. So welcome, thank you for attending.
Yeah.
All right, so by way of announcements, the big announcement coming up is on September 1 and 2, the Interopathon being put on by Stephen Curran and BC Gov. And so on the announcements page, I've got a link here for registration. And so you can go sign up. It's obviously a remote conference, so it's accessible anywhere. My guess is it may be recorded, but I'm not certain on that. Does anybody happen to know if they're planning to record it?
I suspect they will. There's only two tracks going on, so there'll be two rooms, and so it's not a Herculean task to make that happen. I don't know. I haven't had confirmation of that, but I know it will be requested, so we'll talk about it.
Okay, yeah, that'd be great. I know they've tried to set it at a particular time where it's... they set it at a particular time where... it's kind of good and bad for everybody, I guess. It's a little early here on the western side of the United States, but that makes it good for other locations. So that's supposed to be really exciting. So there's a link there if you'd like to sign up. In a nutshell, what I understand the agenda is to make sure that we can issue proofs of claims for credentials that are rooted in different ledgers and ND-based ledgers, and then be able to resolve them. And so that interoperability between ledgers is something that we've kind of been looking for a long time. And so this Interopathon is intended to spur that along.
Yeah, I think it's important to add that it is designed to be an interactive discussion, and especially if you've been thinking about or you're trying to use DIDs with systems other than Indy, your perspective will add a lot to that discussion, so please come.
Excellent, thank you. So is the intent to make it the DIDs and proofs and such resolvable across different types of ledgers or different instances of Indy ledgers or both?
There's a few different specific goals. If you go look at the agenda of the conference, you'll notice there's sessions proposed around how to make DID transactions that are more auditable and validatable in terms of DID documents and standards compliance. There's also sessions around carry and how to make it so the transactions are more fungible. There's also discussions around how to sync data and state across multiple ledgers, or how to make the client-side code more friendly towards credentials protocols that span more than one ledger. There's a lot of interesting trade-offs involved in a lot of those discussions, and So it's good to come and have your use cases represented so that we can talk about what the consequences of those trade-offs might be for your system, as well as for what flexibility it might offer as we are able to support more ledgers going forward.
Excellent. Thank you. Yes, I love all this interoperability. There's a lot of different efforts going on. And when we can keep our protocols and resolvers and such in sync, then it lets us cooperate across instances, which is very, very useful. All right. Any other announcements besides that one? Am I missing any this week?
This is probably implicit, but I'd like to know that it is free. There's no cost there. It's just a registration and, you know, join a Zoom call type of a deal from wherever you are. So if you're interested, then that makes it easier to do.
Okay, I'm going to try to put a note here without that it's free, without it running into that other hyperlinks and how it was doing that. Thank you. Yeah, that's really exciting. That it's free. Hopefully it's recorded, it's online, so it should be accessible to all of us. All right, let's kind of walk through the various working groups and go over what's happened this week. Did anyone attend the main identity working group? So I went and it sounds like the answer is no. I went and reviewed their meeting notes, and they had a presentation on Trust ID. And there's a video available where you can review that video. There's some documentation. This Trust ID was a little bit new to me. Has anyone had experience with that before? All right. So again, that's probably new to all of us then. And the video and documentation are there. Let's see, Hyperledger Indy. Let's see, Stephen's not on the call. Did anyone attend the contributors meeting this week or last week? So that meeting was basically a discussion of how to put together the tracks for the Indy Interopathon that we just discussed. There's some links in there, some notes about what was discussed. For more details on that, see that top link, and that'll show you all the tracks and the times that those are available. Let's see, any other updates from Indy? Is anyone working on the SDK? All right, we've got some updates down below when it comes to the Stewards Council and the TGB, so we can talk about that again. Hyperledger Aries, any updates from either of those A or B calls?
A main topic over the last several weeks here and there has been increasing the amount of verified information that we present to users when they when we ask them a question. And so the two that I'm focused on right now are the, would you like to connect with this person? And the, well, you know, this person has requested a presentation of a credential. And it would be nice to know that have some sort of verified information about who that person is that's you're either connecting to or that is requesting the presentation. And so we are in the middle of a variety of updates that includes the most recent one I presented on yesterday in the B call was a goal code. Specifically for presenting a human-friendly identifier, and that's intended to be something like a domain name, a social media handle, a phone number, an email address, or something like that. And so, there's some other work to be done in terms of governance frameworks surrounding a few of those that can help us get started, and protocols as they relate. But that is has been a longer ongoing discussion. The A call has covered a lot of stuff. Robert Mitwicki is covering a lot of the things that he's doing with the toolbox and the specific frameworks that they have for interactions and consent-based, you know, issuance and some of those things. So those are recorded. I'm getting some of the back recordings posted as we speak. So if you've been waiting for a recorded call that hasn't been there, it'll be there shortly.
Excellent. That's awesome. I like the test harness. It it's a really good automated way to put your agents to the test. Now the goal codes. I got a question about that. Is that I know I asked one of these questions yesterday, but when you have, say, the email address and you receive your incoming communication, you have that you can verify because you know that goal code from out of band. Is there communication over that method, or is it simply a visual moniker?
It's a little bit more than visual in the sense that it's verified. So what the goal is that you present a credential or some other verifiable piece of information. So let's say Nathan and I meet at a conference and we decide that we want to, you know, make a connection. In the process of doing so, I ask him to, you know, offer up a human friendly identifier. He chooses to supply an email address, but not just a self-asserted email address, but rather a credential from someone approved by the governance framework that we share that offers a proof that they have in fact verified that identifier. And the same thing can be true for, you know, social media handles, et cetera, via those sort of authorization methods. And so the idea is that this is a green checkmark style situation. So I see the email address he's revealed with a green checkmark that lets me know that is in fact something that I can trust, as opposed to a self-asserted label, which is what we currently use. And so this solves a number of problems, including man-in-the-middle mitigation, et cetera. But it doesn't require actual communication over the identifier. For example, if I am provided with a phone number, my app is not going to try and text or call that phone number to verify it. We're going to trust the issuers of the appropriate credentials specified in the governance frameworks to do that for us, so that the interaction we have can be much more streamlined and even perhaps happen offline. If we happen to meet and we're in a conference and, you know, there's 99 bajillion phones and not enough cell service to go around, the process would still work and I'd still be able to verify that is his, that's an identifier.
Excellent. That's something that I'm looking forward to. The question about man in the middle on remote introductions was always one that I had. And so it looks like this is addressing that very directly. Thank you. Let's see, any of the other frameworks, Aries frameworks or libraries, does anyone have any updates they'd like to share on those? Okay, let's see, one that's looking, that I haven't looked at before is Framework Go. And so I'm starting to look at that. I'm not very up to speed on that. I'm just digging into it. That looks very promising. We have a couple of people in our group at work that are checking into that. Is anybody work with Framework Go at all?
Yep, this is Kevin Griffin from school. Currently, the work that SCORE is doing on an open source framework is using Aries Go fairly extensively. So we've been involved in some of the features in some of the feature implementations for that recently.
Excellent. Let's see. Do you happen to have a link for that repo that I could put here in the? If you could drop that in the chat, then I'll add it to the agenda here.
Yep, I will.
Awesome. Thank you very much. All right. Everything else I kind of reviewed seems like it's in progress for the shared libraries and so forth. URSA, the Hyperledger URSA project had a meeting recently, I guess it was last week, and they're looking at post-quantum cryptography strategies, which is that's becoming increasingly important. And so by building on top of IRSA, that's something that we can inherit at some future date. I didn't see that there was any time frame for it, but I was really encouraged that they're working on the post-quantum. Trust over IP Foundation. There was a meeting recently, and there's a recording right here in the chat. I also have links for the main site, the wiki, the steering committee, as well as each of the various working groups. And so Trust over IP is, the Trust over IP Foundation is a governance organization. They are creating standards and white papers and strategic documents. I understand that their intent is not to create code, but to leave that to Hyperledger and Diff and Sovereign and all the other groups that are writing code. And the Trust over IP Foundation's purpose is to kind of unify everything and then create governance models for various vertical stacks. So with that in mind, there's half a dozen working groups here. There's a communications working group. What they've been working on recently is next versions of the Trust over IP Foundation white paper that describes the whole process, as well as various diagrams and posts for blogs and different things like that. I've put some links in the agenda here. So I would encourage you to go, whether or not you're a member of the Trust over IP Foundation, it's open for you and it's all free access, of course. But I'd encourage you to go read that white paper, and it'll give you a good idea of where kind of the industry as a whole seems to be is heading. And so that is a good document to read. The governance stack met recently, and they are working on various governance issues, trust over IP standards specifications, which is really kind of a framework that describes everything that goes into a vertical layer one, layer two, layer three, layer four stack. And so those standards are intended to show how to create different verticals. So different trust over IP, you know, SSI verticals, they might anchor on the ND ledger, for example, or they might anchor on some other utility ledger. And so the purpose of those documents is to start defining how all these layers communicate with one another so that you can have, you know, different layers connecting with, you know, different layers above and below. And so those communication interfaces are a big part of what's going on there. Same, you know, the technical stack, it gets a little more into detail on each of those, where they have the Trust over IP interoperability profile or TIPS. And so I've provided some links in there about what the discussions were on the meetings this week and documents you can read to get more up to speed. As well as there's information there on the other different working groups. You'll notice there's some overlap between things that are happening in other community bodies, and that's fine. What this is intending to do is kind of unify all these various efforts in a cohesive fashion to make them to put out specifications and descriptions of how they interoperate with one another. And so that type of governance, as well as layer interaction API, that's the main general purpose of the Trust over IP Foundation.
Steve, I'll mention in particular one of those overlaps. There is a interoperability working group at the DIF, and they are a little bit in conflict with each other, but they're, I want to highlight two different approaches because I think that's instructive. Trust over IP seems to be designing what they want to exist and then figuring out where existing solutions slide in. And the DIFF effort is focused on where people are currently and how we can come together closer. So it's kind of like working from the opposite ends of the spectrum there, but with goals of promoting interoperability in both cases.
Excellent. That's the best description succinctly of the difference between the two that I've heard. So thank you for that. I should put a spot in here for the DIFF interoperability working group. I'll see if I can get that in there for our next meeting, and then we can provide some updates. I'm presuming, Sam, that you attended those meetings. Anything of particular note that we need to know?
I do whenever I can. The working group is set up with liaisons to the various groups, and I am the one for Aries, but not the one for Indy. I'm not really is qualified to address those. And I believe Stephen Curran is also present and much more able to speak to the Indy based concerns there. But the current efforts, it is a new young group. I mean, a lot of the trust of our peace stuff is as well. But it's fairly young, and the focus is trying to map out and figure out where kind of how everything fits together, where there is existing overlap and where there isn't. And I suspect that that will be a multi-week effort, at least.
Perfect. Thank you. Let's see, on the Sovereign Foundation, the TGB met, Technical Governance Board met recently. Nathan, would you like to give a quick update on that?
On which, excuse me?
On our recent TGB meeting.
Oh, sure. The TGB has been trying to figure out how to better follow along with all the tech progress that's occurring and surface that better to the other groups of governance inside the Sovereign Foundation. There's especially been a lot of discussion across those governing bodies about how we document the upgrade process, and we make sure that changes are happening in a way that all the different entities are informed and can serve as checks and balances for one another. For example, the Steward Council, they're the ones that actually deploy the new releases onto their nodes because they are the organizations that run the nodes. And the Board of Trustees vet and verify that the new releases meet the governing principles and the governance framework of the network. And as they put new requirements in, how can they make sure or help influence the tech community to build the things that will accomplish the next generation of that governance framework as it's defined by those at the Trust Over IP Foundation and elsewhere. So there's some documentation that's going on in conjunction with that, and then just also some kind of calls to action to try to get better participation both in the code development and release process on the indie side, as well as some of the documentation work and coordination work that needs to happen between those groups.
Excellent. Thank you. I've put links there for the recent, it's a rolling set of meeting minutes for the DGB. And I put, with the Steward Council, we recently had, it was an all stewards meeting. And in that meeting, it went over all the various work streams that are starting up. For health monitoring of the network. That's of the network, not actual like COVID health or anything. So monitoring of the network, as well as a technical work stream and community engagement. And so the slides are available. So if you missed that call, I provided a link there and you can go check those out. Let's see. The next item is the DIFF DIDCOM working group. Now, I've invited Sam Curran to present an overview of DIDCOM protocols and technologies, and so we can probably just segue into that here in a minute. And so I've tried to put some notes of things that have been discussed recently. And so those are there. DIDCOM Part of the reason I invited Sam, one of the very exciting things about this whole industry for me personally, and from what I'm seeing in the media and in the industry itself, is the interoperability that everyone is building. So if you're building, this ledger versus that ledger, Aries is there to kind of bridge over the top of those and hopefully make it so everything's interoperable. And that interoperability is a really big push. And so DIDCOM is, for me, what attracts me to it is it's a really good way for there to be an authenticated protocol that agents can speak. And as we enhance the DID resolvers that relies on, and we can span networks with that, DIDCOM will be there to help all the agents from these various implementations be able to talk together. And I think that's really, really important. And so that's why I invited Sam today. So Sam, if you're ready, I can turn the screen over to you.
I am.
Let me stop sharing. And so there you go.
All right. Thanks for inviting me. I'll give an update. Some of you may have seen some of the stuff before, and I will go ahead and cover it, not in super in depth, and then allow for questions. I'm also going to be practicing, for those of you that are veterans of the DIDCOM world, I'm going to be practicing my explanation of what DIDCOM actually is. There's been a lot of confusion around what it is and what it isn't, and so I will be attempting some of those things. So if you have feedback either during or after what I share, that would be helpful as I try to constantly come up with cleaner ways to identify those things. I have placed a link to these slides inside of the wiki for today, if you're curious or if you'd like to see them offline. So the DIDCOM working group is at the Decentralized Identity Foundation. I'll have some history there in a minute that explains how and why that is. But first, scope. Right out of our charter, our goal is to produce specs that embody a method for secure, private, and authenticated message-based communication, where the trust is rooted in DIDs and depends on the message themselves and not on the transports used. In a second, I'll get to a stack diagram that shows kind of how this slots in there and what its purpose is. But that's what our goal is a method of communication and little else. And so it's actually thinner than you might imagine, depending on what you consider to be within the scope of DIDCOM. And again, I'll talk to that. So the history here, this originated in Hyperledger Aries. Some of the roots go a little deeper than that into Indy before Aries was spun out. We began to realize that designing our protocol for Aries agents in two layers is important. There's the foundational layer that provides some common features to all interaction, and then there are protocols on top of that. And so DIDCOM is in fact that foundational layer that supports the development of protocols. At IW29, there was a whole lot of interest, and there was lots of interest in having it not be part of the Aries ecosystem. And lots of work ensued, and then we had a diff group. There was lots of like legal IPR issues and things to sort out, and that was a whole lot of fun. The thing I wanna highlight here is that we've begun calling what we're doing in Hyperledger Aries version 1. And then the new work is on version 2 is how we keep them separate. Aries is still working, using version 1. It's still happening there. And while we're discussing what version 2 is and what features it will have over in the DIDCOM working group. So I'm going to bring up my participants list so that I can try to notice hands up and things of that nature. So here's kind of how the stack looks, right? On the very bottom, we have DIDs and DID documents. You have a DID, you can resolve that and end up with a DID document. The DID document has things like keys and endpoints in it. And the goal of DIDCOM is to provide a method when you possess a DID and a DID document to then communicate securely with the party behind that DID. be that an individual or a company or anything there. And then DidCom itself doesn't actually do a super lot of interesting stuff. It basically just sets up a secure connection that's based on the keys and endpoints present in the DID documents. And in that way, you can do interesting things on top of it. So DidCom is as exciting as HTTP is. And I both mean that sarcastically and completely literally, in the sense that the web that we have today is built on HTTP as a foundation, and has enabled an incredible amount of innovation on top of it. But HTTP itself is not typically that exciting, and you only really get into it if you're writing a library or you're a protocol nerd or things like that. And so DidCom fits a little bit into that role. It's not a perfect analogy, but I hope that helps understand the place we want it to be. If you consider, JavaScript frameworks and all sorts of interesting things that browser to do to be on top of HTTP, then DidCom protocols are similar. Lots of the early protocols that we have that are in use or under development involve credential exchange, which is a natural place to apply some energy or to lay this on. But there's a whole lot of others, including person-to-person messaging and all sorts of things that can, a generic data transfer and other things that can happen between two parties that own DIDs. And so there's a wide spectrum of things that are possible there. So this particular stack here is to draw the focus. DidCom working group is focused exactly on this layer. And it's actually in our charter to not venture outside of this. And that helped us get started sooner and avoid some complicating factors. That does mean that the conversations on standardizing what those protocols are on top of DidCom is future work that may happen with the same group with an adjustment of the scope, or likely other already existing appropriate groups as they decide that they want to build on top of DidCom itself as an architectural layer. And so that's where the focus is, in providing just the necessary mechanics to make this work to support the types of interesting things that happen with the development of protocols. There is some related work, and I'll get to this a little bit in the what's new in V2 stuff that I have at the end, but there are two things that we're basing this on, and one is JWM itself, and JWM is a JSON web message. It fits in the JW, star family of specs like JWT or JWE, and that is a draft at the IETF. And there's also an ECDH1PU draft that we are basing this on that allows us to do some of the things we did in V1, but in a way that is more standards compliant than we had done before. In V1, we sort of just made some stuff happen and bent some rules a little bit. And these both of these items are efforts to standardize similar mechanisms so that we're producing something that isn't bespoke, but rather is based on either existing work in the ECDH1PU case or in a generalized standard in the JWM case there. So those are links if you're curious about those aspects of it. So why do you want to do this? Why do you want to use DidCom itself? It's transport agnostic in the sense that it works over WebSockets and HTTP, etc. And you can just do something yourself. Why do you want to use DidCom? And that's an important discussion point and the real benefit from what DidCom brings. One is that you can rely upon when we're done, you can rely upon the security provided by the DidCom mechanism itself. We'll have gone through the process of demonstrating its security properties. And so if you use DidCom-based libraries or methods or follow the spec, then you will have all of the benefits that it provides from a security perspective. And that isn't just the encryption in play necessarily, but also some privacy-preserving features that are powerful part of the spec and using DidCom itself. A huge reason why I believe DidCom it will be important is a foundational layer of interoperability. Two protocols built on top of DidCom can be very expressively different, but their foundation makes them very closely interoperable. Meaning if you have a code base that speaks DidCom and protocol A, and a code base that speaks DidCom with protocol B, The bridge there is a small one, which allows for increasing interoperability as we move forward, because the foundational layer is easy to identify. And though the protocols may be different, the structural pieces are in place in a really important way. And so lots of the work of DIDCOM after we get our spec to a draft stage will actually be evangelizing its purposes and its use and why you actually want to use something like this in the various projects that exist. There are a variety of ways to communicate securely, but precious few of them are based, you know, purely on the foundation of DIDs and DID documents themselves. And so that's going to be the work, is helping people understand the value of doing so. DIDCOM is repudiable by default, meaning that that if Alice sends Bob a message, then Bob cannot prove to Carol that Alice did so. And that's a really useful feature to have. There are ways to add non-repudiation in there for the protocols where that is important, but making it repudiable by default means that when you need repudiation, that it is available to you. And that's one of the privacy features that it contains. It also fills the gap between DIDs and protocols. There are lots of folks basing protocols on top of DIDs without DIDCOM in between. And they all make generally arbitrary decisions about how they apply it that way. Or it might work fine on HTTP, but it completely falls over in a case where you need to send a message to a mobile device, for example, and you lack the ability in a standards way to actually make that happen. And so there's an important filling of the gap there. The hope is that as we make DIDCOM a thing and people understand its use, that people can lean on it and then get busy doing the protocol side of things, which is far more interesting than focusing on the solutions that DIDCOM provides. And then the development of protocols is something we believe in. The fantastic thing about HTTP in particular as a web technology is that it has allowed you to create interfaces for a wide variety of purposes. You can do file sharing, you can do chat, you can do all sorts of things on top of HTTP without having to figure out the annoying bits of HTTP and the security of it as a foundational layer. And so I'm excited to accelerate the development of protocols for various purposes by solving these problems in that foundational layer. I've said a lot. Are there any questions or comments to this point? All right, please do interrupt. Raise your hand in chat. Add a comment in the chat, and I'll see if I can get to them, and we can answer those questions and address those points. DIDCOM is transport agnostic, meaning the important attributes of DIDCOM itself are independent of the transport being used. And an example here is HTTP and WebSockets. They're both useful and have their place, but they're substantially different. Notably, HTTP has headers in the request and in the response, and WebSockets do not. And so if you are going to design a protocol that works across a variety of transports, you need to solve some of those concerns in a way that works regardless of the transport actually being used. Offline use cases dictate that things like NFC and Bluetooth are also really important to use. There's a number of important identity use cases where you need to communicate with another party and neither of you have a stable internet connection to use. And so being able to use something like Bluetooth that is more proximate and can happen deep in a cave are also important there. There's a wide variety of refugee use cases also in particular where you might be in a physical location without good cell service. And this enables many valuable things to happen that way as well. And so there's a big focus on making sure that what we create can not care about the transport being used, and that's a really important piece of this. So our current work, this is a slightly old summary, but outlines a lot of the important things that we've been wrestling with. Routing messages is important. This allows for a couple of practical use cases, including herd privacy and making it difficult for someone to inspect network traffic, even if they can't see the contents of the message, inferring too much from the timing and the flow of messages. Self-routing provides a way to blend in with the herd and make that difficult to determine. Also, routing routing messages solves the issues that are important with endpoints or agents that are unable to yield a publicly routable endpoint like an HTTP URI that someone can post to. Routing messages provides a generic way to solve those issues that also encompasses firewalls as well. If you're running an agent behind a corporate firewall and still need to be able to get messages to it, the same mechanism solves that case as well. We've talked about how what in the DID document enables you to bootstrap into DID communication and into DID com and make that work, as well as the specifics of transports. It is transport port agnostic, but it's important that as we apply DID com to transports, we do it in a consistent manner. And that includes things like how is it encoded over a WebSocket connection, or you know what HTTP response codes are used for a successful message transmission using HTTP. We've also talked a lot about key type support. This is an interesting one because you want to support enough keys that interoperability is a thing that can happen, but too many keys makes it really, really difficult to support technically. Discussion about key type support is also very important. There's also, and I'll get to this in just a second, a big shift from the V1 to V2, and we've landed on a model for V2 that we call zero round trip. In V1, you had to perform an exchange of DIDs before with the other party before you actually could talk about anything meaningful. And by moving lots of those same types of information into headers of DIDCOM messages, we've enabled what we call a zero round trip model, where you can send a meaningful message on the very first message that you send to the other party. This is in particular a use case in a partially offline state, because to exchange DIDs, the V1 of the protocol requires both parties to come online at least once in order for that exchange to happen. And in the V2 model, you're able to exchange meaningful messages immediately, even if you need to send multiple messages before the other party comes online. And that's really useful in a mobile-to-mobile use case, or when you are you're interacting in a very rapid way, and having that happen is important. We still support all the same security properties, including rotating away from publicly known DIDs or DIDs passed in the clear, but it allows for a more rapid method of communication. And so that's been a big topic in the past as well. So the what's new in V2 is usually what folks are curious about if they've known in what's going on in V1 and haven't been paying a lot of attention to the DIDCOM work. I've mentioned several of these already. The adjustments to the standard tracks dependencies with JWM and ECDH 1PU are one of those differences. It will look very similar to you if you compare V1 and V2, but there are some adjustments that will be needed there. It's not just the port of the same envelope formats we've been using in V1. Also, the zero round trip instead of DID exchange is another important aspect there that will change a little bit of what happens. The same mechanical pieces exist, but that we've adjusted where they exist and how they're transferred in order to gain the important features that we need. Also, in DIDCOM V1, we make heavy use of header of decorators. That is attributes with a tilde in front of them to distinguish them from regular attribute names. And the JWM structure allows for headers to exist separately from the body transport. And I'll give you an example of this in a second. That allows for headers to exist in many of the cases that decorators covered. There are probably still use cases of decorators that make sense, but it's substantially reduced from the number of decorators that we were using inside of DIDCOM V1. Further, this is a more recent item of conversation. DIDCOM V1 supports a feature called return route that allows for the normally single direction transfer of messages to become bidirectional in certain use cases. This is incredibly useful when you're dealing with agents that are not direct routable and need to make an outbound connection in order to receive inbound messages. That's a regular core part of V1, and the discussions that we've had are leading towards support of that in and V2 as an extension, which carries a lot of advantages. Among those, it is totally not necessary for agents without this concern to implement return routing at all. And second, it allows for there's likely to be more innovation around last mile message delivery than the rest of the spec. And this this allows for the creation or migration to newer versions or better ways of doing things without having to revisit the core spec entirely. And so we have not yet had a spec extension in the same way that other specs have. It's worth noting that most of the extensions or the new features you'd want to add are with protocols themselves. But there are cases where a protocol would be insufficient for the task, and an extension is warranted to modify some existing behavior of the base protocol itself. And that's where the extension's coming into play. I'll give you, not necessarily as return route as an extension, but I'll give you a little bit of a look here. I've got links on the last slide, but this is the latest draft rendered version here is available at this URI. This is an example of message structure. In DIDCOM V1, we have a flat structure where tildes, the decorators themselves, separate things out, you know, like timestamps, et cetera, that are considered more standard across all messages. And in DIDCOM V2, we have a body that contains all of the attributes that are unique to the message type specified here. And so these things are also considered headers. And there's some advantages of doing so. You'll notice that we have DIDs themselves instead of just keys in the headers. That's another change from V1 to V2. And that actually enables the round trip, the zero round trip behavior that we've discussed. These are encrypted, and so they are not revealed outside of the encrypted envelope. Keys are still present there in the encryption layer. But specifying the actual DIDs on the interior makes the process of looking up the DID and then doing the key verification a little bit different. You don't have to maintain a reverse index of keys. And it also provides you with the ability for DIDs that use stuff like initial state, which includes the plan changes to the DID peer method, to happen in this manner. We also had some explicit allowances for DID peer mechanisms inside of DIDCOM V1, and those have been moved. The same concerns still exist, but they have been moved into the DID peer spec itself through representing a standard DID here. And so there's a couple of advantages there. And then all of the message specific attributes and their values live down inside of the body itself. And so that's an example of the differing structure that exists. Any questions? I've got Michael. What does V2 mean for current maintainers of language-specific areas frameworks? How should we prepare for V2? Is it foolhardy to implement RFC on V1? DIDCOM with V2 on the horizon? That's a super good question. Any color you want to add to that, or is that read out of the question good enough, Michael?
Well, it's three questions, so hopefully it's not too much. But yeah, I am just very interested in how I can be involved in kind of the implementation path into V2 and kind of where that should start and how far along we are currently.
Yeah, so super good questions. I'm going to start backwards and talk about protocols. Mapping a DIDCOM V1 protocol into V2 will be very seamless. There will be minor adjustments in the cases where there's reliance on decorators inside the protocol, but protocols that don't should come across just fine, which means you will be capable of using the exact same message handling code that you do in V1, and there should be no or very, very slight adjustments there. From the sort of encryption and envelope processing state, there will be adjustments. And part of the later work as we progress past the draft will actually be a migration guide that describes the changes from V1 to V2 and in strategies for handling that, including if there is a support both for a period strategy that allows for you to receive messages of either type, and how those would actually translate in between. There may be inside of the Aries community a community coordinated update process where we add support for both or for the new, and then later migrate to sending the but still send the old, and then later migrate to sending the new as well by default. And so there is likely to be a similar process there, but those the efforts that we have will include the creation of libraries that handle this sort of a thing, which means that you'll simply include the old libraries and the new libraries, and you'll be ideally be able to differentiate between the two types of messages on the way in the door, and then handle them separately, and then have the same protocols handled. So I anticipate a relatively smooth rollout. There will be some details in play, but we will be able to add support for V2 to code bases that currently support V1. There will be a little bit of complexity there, as you can imagine, but I think it will be at manageable levels. Does that answer your question sufficiently, Michael?
That's great, Sam. Are there any current like implementations or starts of implementations in the open source that we can start looking at?
Not yet.
Okay.
The other work item that I should mention is that we have within the next several weeks the goal to have every aspect of the DIDCOM spec that that needs to be in the final represented either by the text in the spec or by a detailed to-do, and that way we can begin the process of sweeping those up into the first draft spec that we have. And we'll be sure to make some noise when we do reach a draft spec stage. If you're interested in making sure that different aspects are addressed, then hitting the repo and making either a PR or an issue there will be helpful. The repo is here, and I don't think it's on the slide, but I can make it be, and there are both issues active and a process for submitting PRs if you'd like. There's also a bunch of source files that we compile into an output spec, and so there's links here. In addition to the actual spec itself, which is focused on normative text, we have an implementer's guide, which will contain commentary and explanations that go beyond just the normative statements that will be helpful for those. And I anticipate the migration guide being a portion of the implementer's guide in that process. Yep. So there's the link to the actual repo for the spec itself. Here's the rendered version that I was displaying. The link is here. This isn't the diff. Identity.foundation is the URI there. The diff has recently made a change and is now free for sub 1,000 people organizations. And so if you would like to be a member, you are welcome to join. As you join different working groups, including the DIDCOM working group, there are IPR agreements to sign, but that will help you get involved. We have our working group cardings, our working group calls at Monday at noon US Pacific. And it does stay consistent to US Pacific across the daylight savings time, et cetera. So that's something to be mindful of as we head into the fall here and some adjustments there. This is a link to the running agenda, and recordings are also posted there if you would like to be involved. Any questions in the remaining about minute we have? All right. Please feel free to reach out if you have questions or comments, and I would be happy to talk with you. I am Telegram Sam on all the socials, and you're also welcome to reach out to me. I'm also Telegram Sam in the Hyperledger Rocket Chat.
Excellent, Sam. Thank you very much for joining us and giving us such a great overview of DIDCOM and the state of its development. I know this is an area that touches on everybody here on the call, and so this was a great presentation. Thank you for the slides. For the rest of the attendees, I've updated the wiki page and added a link right there at the top for Sam's slides. I would encourage you to download those, especially because they have all the links to to the GitHub repo and the diff spec and so forth. And so those are very good reads, and I'd encourage you to grab those. Thank you everyone for joining and for all of your questions and interactions. We meet for this call every 2 weeks. And so we'll be meeting here again in second week of September. And so it looks like on the 10th of September, we'll be meeting again at this same time. And so thank you all for joining, and I look forward to chatting with you in the discussion groups. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. See you next time.
Yep, thank you.